My name is Jason Wright, and I'm the author of The Cross Gardener. I was inspired to write The Cross Gardener because I have been curious about these roadside memorials. They're very popular around the country, but particularly in the Shenandoah Valley where I live, they are everywhere. Within my home, there are probably half a dozen of these little roadside memorials. Sometimes it's just a single cross. Sometimes it's three or four crosses. Sometimes you see people at the crosses when you drive by. I've been fascinated by these for a number of years and wondered what it would be like to go and know that that cross had personal meaning, that you had lost a loved one there, and to go and to mourn at these roadside crosses. And I've also, through the years, regretted not being next to my father when he passed away in 1987. And that was hard for me to not be there and to have an opportunity to say goodbye. And I always wondered what that was like when my father passed away. Was he alone? Was he scared? Was there someone to sort of greet him on the other side? And that has made me ask myself many times through the years, how thin is the veil between this life and the next? So The Cross Gardener is about that very question. How thin is the veil between this life and the next? And does anyone really die alone? Even if someone is by themselves traveling out in the middle of nowhere on some quiet country road at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they lose control and their car rolls over and they die on the side of the road, seemingly alone, are they really alone? And that's sort of the basis for the book. I just love the Shenandoah Valley. It's a unique place in the world, very, very quiet, but only about an hour from Washington, D.C. A lot of Civil War history. It's a very special place. It's, as I said, it's very quiet. And there are a lot of roadside crosses in the Shenandoah Valley. I don't know the history behind them necessarily in the valley, but I know they've been around a long time. And for some reason, I seem to see more of them, these little roadside memorials, in the Shenandoah Valley than I see in other parts of the country. I've been fortunate to hear some good feedback on the book, and it seems the question is pretty common. A lot of folks wonder what that process is like. And there's no one listening to this podcast right now that hasn't lost a loved one, maybe even in a crash on the side of the road. And there's probably no one listening to this podcast right now that hasn't wondered what that process is like. So I think folks are resonating to the message of the book. It's a hard book to read. There are passages in the book that made me cry as I wrote them, which is a first for me. I've never been that emotionally affected as I wrote any of my books. This one had a few key chapters that even now, as I went through the editing process and the publishing process, if I reread them, they still really, really get to me. But the message of hope resonates certainly through the last few pages of the book, and readers are connecting with that. And they're telling me that even though it is a tough read in places, there's plenty of hope. I do think we live in tough times. You don't have to throw a rock very far to find someone who is out of work or struggling or sick or depressed. There's a lot of that in the world, and I think when we struggle, we look for guarantees. Where am I guaranteed to find an escape? Where am I guaranteed to find a little bit of hope that the 6 o'clock news can't take away from me? And I think sometimes we find that in books. I know in my life I find it in books and movies as often as I can because I know no one can take those messages away from me. It doesn't matter how rough a day I've had or how rough my week has been, if I curl up with a book, particularly a book by Jason F. Wright, I feel some inspiration. I feel like I've beaten the odds a little bit because the world is trying to sometimes tear us down, and a book can lift you up. As I said, it really is a guarantee. You're guaranteed if you find a good book and you curl up and read it and you turn off the distractions of the world, you'll be taken at least for a few hours to a better place. I like to write in solitude as much as possible. I have a little writing office where I turn off my cell phone, I turn off the email, I put on some noise-canceling headphones and a little bit of soft music, and I write for long, long stretches at a time and try to turn off the world's distractions as much as I possibly can. And then when the deadline nears and the pressure builds, I escape even further to a friend's cabin in the boonies of West Virginia in the Canaan Valley, and I stay for a few days and lock myself in. And there's no better way, certainly, to escape the distractions and stress and anxiety of the world and the news than to be, you know, at 3,000 feet in the mountains of West Virginia. And that does work for me. I do like to sprinkle some details of my life in my books. None of the plots or the storylines are necessarily taken from my life, but some of the people and the places and the details, like character names, for example, are taken from my life, and that helps me to sort of visualize what I'm writing about and why it matters. And as I said with The Cross Gardener, this theme of how do we die and what is that process like and why death is an important passage from this life to the next, it's unavoidable, so it's good to understand something that is unavoidable and that affects us all. And there is some of my life in the book, but not in key ways. None of the books are certainly based on my own direct life experiences. I have some dear friends, the Armstrong family. They run an orchard in Strasburg, Virginia, and I've been out there a number of times for dinner and barbecues and just to visit through the years. Long before a cross gardener was even in my mind, I had become familiar with this family and this particular orchard. And then when I began to craft the story, it just seemed like the obvious place to put it, because the healing process is so imperfect, and it is so different for everyone. I lost my father when I was 16. There's someone listening right now, I'm sure, that lost their father when they were a teenager, and their experience was probably very, very different from mine. And apple orchards are very different one from another. This family, in fact, has half a dozen apple orchards in the area, and they are all a little bit different. And they are very imperfect. Unlike sort of traditional farming, when we think of the Midwest and corn and wheat or beans or potatoes, we tend to think of these long, you know, fields as far as the eye can possibly see. The lines are very, very straight, and the process of farming is pretty clear cut. Apples are very, very different. The land is very hilly. In fact, the hillier, the better for apples, I'm told. And the ground is very, very knobby. There are weeds all over the place. It's a different kind of farming. It's a different kind of growth process for this particular fruit, in this case, the apple. And that reminded me a little bit of what life is like. Life is certainly very imperfect. And when we lose people we love, there's no real roadmap for that. How we deal with those stages of grief, they're different for everyone. And I liked the image of that. And I really just liked the feel of the apple orchard. I spent a lot of hours walking up and down the rows of the apple orchard. And there's something about that that just felt right for the story. The Cross Gardener is certainly the most difficult book I've written from an emotional standpoint, and the toll that it took on me each day that I wrote, and as I said earlier, as I wrote specifically the real tough chapters that readers will be introduced to shortly, I hope. And I think it's because not only did writing some of these chapters that deal with the tragic loss of the main character, John Bevan, and awakening those feelings in me of what it was like when my father died, or when my best friend died when I was in high school, or when my grandparents have died, but also because I'm now in a position where I'm approaching my father's age when he passed away, and I now have four children of my own. I have a 14-year-old who's just 2 years removed from my age when my father passed away. And to see her and to spend time with her and to be writing this book, it reminded me that life is awfully, awfully short. And here I am already with a beautiful 14-year-old daughter who could one day be without me. And there's not a whole lot that I can do about that. There's not a lot that any of us can do about that. As I said before, we all know that death is unavoidable and inevitable. And so I think as I wrote The Cross Gardener, it took a little bit more out of me each day as I thought about my life and my family and my children and my wife, whom I love so much, and also back to those feelings in during the holidays of 1987 when I experienced all this firsthand with the unexpected death of my own father. But I do think because of that emotion and because of my personal connection, not to the plot, but to the emotions of the book, it helped the book become a better story. I think it's my best book to date, and I hope readers agree.